George.
George.
I don't know about the wisdom. I have a lot of experience, and a lot of it is not good. And we're on a step about not good. It's really not about good or bad anymore. It's about appropriate and inappropriate behaviors. Let's do a little quick review of. We're on step six today. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character from us. I like to tell things with stories. You know, I came into the rooms, and one of my favorite six-step story is I used to come into the room and I would complain about the guy in my halfway house who wasn't taking out the garbage. And I would moan and groan at a meeting, and then I'd get real angry and my language would come out sideways, and I'd turn around to my sponsor and I'd say, I'm going back to bad behavior. And he used to smack me in the back and he said, George, don't worry, you ain't learned no new ones yet. Now I was 30 days sober. I had no idea what the six-step looked like. And I like to say that to start that off because my defects of character are still there. They haven't gone away. They've changed. They come up in different ways. And the six steps about defects in character. So I used to be a smart guy, and I used to turn around and say, well, all my defects have character. That's not a defect of character. What is a defect of character is what we're going to get to. But how do we get here? How do we get to look at this part of our life? I came in on the first step, and I finally now believe that I'm powerless over alcohol, and my life was unmanageable, so I made a commitment to another human being to go through the process of working steps, called him my sponsor. I came in these rooms, and I saw a pal working these rooms where people were actually happy, and they had hope and smiling, and I didn't know how to steal it. I couldn't manipulate it, and I couldn't buy it, so I had to figure out how did I get there, and that second tradition led me to a loving God that I watched in these rooms from in other people. I did have a lot of powers. I always share about my three higher powers when I walked in here: money, property, and prestige, which kept me away from any kind of relationship with the God of my understanding today, because that's what I focused on: money, property, and prestige. And there's a part in our literature which talks about, for us, spiritual well-being always preceded the material, not the other way around. See, I had it all backwards. Like most of my life, everything was backwards. I came to that third step, and I sat down with a sponsor on 4th of July in 1994 outside of a church, got on my knees and said a prayer, and he said, okay, you willing to turn your will and life over to the care of God? And I said, no, because I wasn't. I still wasn't talking to God. I still was mad at God. I held on to childhood ideas. The big book talks about it a lot. He said, well, like the 12 and 12 says, are you willing to do the rest of the steps? I said yes. Now we get to the fourth step, and I shared this about, I had a blockage, and my blockage was about being molested by two men that were dressed as women. I wouldn't write it down. I finally got through that blockage, and I wrote what I call my immoral inventory, which is 28 pages, all my garbage throughout my life. And like I tell everybody, whether your sponsor tells you to do a life story, do it out of the big book, answer the questions in 12 and 12, go over to 28 or 30 different four-step guides I brought here a couple of weeks ago to show you. It doesn't matter. There's only one wrong way to do a four-step. That's not to write it. It's really that simple. Whatever your sponsor suggests, it's the way to go. Do you do one? Do you do 10? Do you do 50? That's individual also. I don't get into that controversy. And again, I don't speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm only sharing my experience through my journeys. I had more than one journey through all 12 steps. And I continue to have journeys through all 12 steps. Something I believe in. Some people do them once. Some people do them annually. Some people do them every 5 years. Whatever floats your boat. There is no right or wrong way. What a relief that is to know I don't have to do this right. I don't have to get good. I got to get well. I get to that fifth step. And last week I talked about sitting with, thinking I was going to go over a four-step with a sponsor. And actually what I was doing was meeting a man to go sit down and tell him all the garbage that I wrote down. And I was scared to death. Now, my sponsor was with me for every inch of my four-step. And all of a sudden, I was worried that he was going to judge me on everything I had written down. He already knew it all, but not in my mind. I thought this was a revelation to him. Shows you how struck up my mind was when I got here. And I went to a meeting, and it was up on the second floor, and I told an old-timer that I'm going over my four-step with my sponsor. And he said, no, you're not. You're going to do a fifth-step. All of a sudden, the sweat came on my hands, and I was worried. I'm going to be judged. He's going to put it out in the rooms, all the dirty stuff that I did. And what ended up happening was we went down to Palmetto Park Road, and and actually A1A, and I oversat looking the ocean, and for 5 hours I dumped everything, and he, good sponsorship, and he said, if there's anything you forgot and you think about it, I want you to come back, pick up the phone, and tell me, and we can address it later on. And we sat down with the big book, and we went to the part of the book, I go to the book, because I love the book, where it says, returning home, which is at the end of the fifth step, which is really going into the sixth step. It says, I know it's in here, Alan. Into action, not into thinking, I know that. It says, right after the end of the fourth step, it says, returning home. And my sponsor and I sat on the beach, and he asked me these questions. We got on my knees. I got on my knees with him for the second time I ever prayed with somebody. And he asked me these questions as they are in the book. He says, when you go home, I want you to take an hour. No, when we leave here, no TV, no radio, nothing. I want you to go home. I want you to take your book from the shelf, and I want you to read the same questions we're going to go over. And he says, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God, prayer, from the bottom of our heart, for we know Him better. Taking the book from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps, carefully reviewing the first five proposals, which is the first five steps. It says, we ask if we omitted anything, for we're building an arch where we shall walk a free man. So my sponsor said, do you really omit your palace over alcohol and your life is unmanageable? I said, yes. Says, do you believe there's a power greater than yourself? I said, absolutely. Says, you're willing to turn your life over to the care of the program, because I was still having a God problem? I said, yes. He said, did you do a moral inventory to the best of your ability? And I said, yes. He says, have you admitted to God, to yourself, and another human being the exact nature of your wrongs? Well, I'll tell you how that worked out, because my sponsor and I made a list, as it talks about in Bill's story. And I said, yes. And he says, okay. And then he says, your work solid so far? I did everything I was asked. I did it to the best of my ability. I said, yes. He said, are the stones properly in place? I said, yes. And he asked if I skimped on anything. And when I thought about it, no, I had at that moment. But a little later on, that way, on my way home, I remembered when I was in high school, I had a party at my house, and I had a friend, and we were drinking, and I had a BB gun. And he got loud, so I went into the closet, and I shot him with it, and didn't put it on my fourth step. So I called my sponsor and told him about that. But that was one of the things I had left out, but it was solid so far. And I hadn't really skimped on it in the cement I was putting into this foundation of these first five steps. He said, did I try to make mortar without sand? The answer to that was no. And it said, if you can answer satisfactorily to our satisfaction, not to my satisfaction, but to my sponsor's satisfaction, together with him, could I answer to his satisfaction? We look at step six. And it says, we emphasize willingness as being indispensable. Now, my favorite statement about willingness without action is mental masturbation. It's the only way I know to say it. If I'm willing to do something and I don't take the action to do it, I'm fooling you, I'm fooling me, and I'm heading backwards. And I was told real early on, there's only two ways you go in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're either going to go forward, away from a drink, or you're going to go back and get drunk. So if I wasn't going to take the actions that I was asked to do, from here on out, I was going to be in trouble. And I was afraid to go back and open up that cardboard box that I folded when I got here. All right? He says, we emphasize willingness being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us those things which we admitted objectionable? Now, there's certain things I admitted that was objectionable. Me going out in the street, and I used to say when I got in here, it's nicer to give a kind word with a gun than just give a kind word alone. So if you guys on the street know how I got my money when I didn't have any, you'd understand that. It's easy to break into a building when it's locked and I can steal something and nobody knows, or help somebody steal. I can tell lots of stories about things that I did with nine-step stuff. I have a friend of mine that I talk to this day, and they had a diamond ring, an engagement ring, and I decided to take it. It was worth about $5,000. And I stole it, and I sold it, and I helped them look for it. You know, that's a character defect. I don't know about anybody else that had that defect. And those were things I had to face up to in my sixth step. See, it's not about what I did to the other people. It's what I was doing to myself by that. because I was raised with certain morals and convictions and things that I had that I lived with that I was now going against. And there's a lot of defects of character. We all have them. We'll get to the list in a minute. And we admitted them. And can he take them all, every one? No, he couldn't. There's some I like. I liked the scratch-offs when I got here. I liked the girls when I got here. I still like the girls. That's not going to change. That's just one of my defects of character. Just don't act that on this thing. There's nothing wrong with liking things. It's how what I used to do to get them that was wrong. The behaviors weren't appropriate. So, you know, can God, was I willing to let go of everything? No. So my sponsor said, the best thing to do in situations like that is pray for the willingness to become willing to let it go. Right? Whether it's spending money, whether it's eating, whether it's gambling, whether it's cheating. The only thing they told me that I had to do 100% was not pick up the first drink. And the rest would fall in place when I was ready. Now, a lot of my defects I didn't know I had. And I want to talk about some of the defects. And then it says, when we're ready. Now, that was your sixth step. That's all. The sixth step is one paragraph in the big book. And the seventh step is one prayer. So if I'm willing for this, and he sat down with me and we said this prayer, and we asked to say the seven-step prayer, my Creator, I'm willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray you now remove from me every single defect of character, stand in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows, grant me the strength that I go forth from here to do your bidding. Thy will be done. Amen. End of prayer. Done. Six and seven. I thought I was off the hook. He said, now go home and I want you to review that. And that's what I did. And then after I called, and they told me, then I called the next day and tell them how I felt. And I felt pretty good about that, because when I finished my fifth step, I thought I jumped to eight already, you know, six and seven was gone. Easy. A prayer and a paragraph, I was done. I didn't have nothing else to worry about. He said, we're going to go back and revisit it now. And he said, I want you to just enjoy this for a week. And I do the same little thing with my sponsees. I have a little game we play that was given to me by my sponsor, and I'm sure it's not original. There was a guy in 1950 that used to do it on paper. His name is Father John Doe. It's called the Sobriety Beyond, where he used to write the defect on one side and the asset on another. It goes back many years. He was one of the first priests that broke his anonymity to help other priests. Father Martin talks about certain things. There's two books that I was asked to read when I got to my sixth step. One was The Spirituality of Imperfection by Ernest Kurtz, not official AA stuff, and the other was Drop the Rock. Both of them were very useful in my recovery. I'm not publicizing them for you to go out and get them. I'm just telling you those were the tools that were given to me. And what we did is I was told with my sponsor when I sat down with him and we went to go review the sixth step. He and I, and it says in Bill's story, my friend and I made a list of those who I felt resentment and hurt and who I was going to straighten out my past. And those are really your character defects. Now, what's a character defect? They talk about the word sin, or the seven deadly sins, and that's a good place to start with what they are and what they mean, because we talk about character defects all day long, but does anybody really look up what the definition is? Here's my sponsor again, 1939 dictionary. Go look it up. I had to buy one. And the seven deadly sins is a good place to start out of 12 and 12. Those are character defects. Pride and excessive belief in one's own abilities. That interferes with the individual recognition of the grace of God. It has been called sin, for which all others arise. Pride is known as vanity. Had both of those. Envy. And I love when people talk about envy and jealousy being very close. They're really not. Envy is a desire for another's traits, status, abilities, or situations. You got something I want. That's what it is. Gluttony is an inordinate desire to consume more than one, which one requires. My sponsor said in the case, it's not only food. You have gluttony in a lot of other areas, in spending, in eating, in showing people. I used to say, I had no money when I was brand new and I wanted to take everybody out for coffee. And then I get to there and say, oh, I don't have no money. Will somebody else pay? You know, just the gluttony of that. That was being gluttonous. Lust and inordinate craving for the pleasure of the body. That's all it is. Anger. Manifested the individual who spurns love and opts instead for fury. It's also known as wrath. And I had a lot of wrath when I got here. Greed is a desire for material wealth or gain, ignoring the realm of the spiritual. It's also called, it's covetousness, when you covet something. And sloth, laziness. It's an avoidance of physical work, and the 12 and 12 talks about it as being something that is... Procrastination, sloth in five syllables, is the way the book talks about it. And I had all of them. We all have all of them to a more or less degree. But when they overrun the need that they were given, because that was my survival skills, now I'm living in what I call sin. And for me, the word sin is anything that is selfish in nature. And that's how it was given to me. So if I'm doing something that I am working on out of a position of self, self can't fix self. I needed the guidance of a sponsor. So I had all these things, and I didn't even know what they were. So from that 28-page immoral inventory, my sponsor was kind enough to sit down with me, as I am with my sponsees, and make a list. And the anger, the avoidance, the alibis, I was apart from everybody. I accused everybody of everything. I was blaming. I was ambushing other people and with character assassination. I was full of anxiety. I was aggravated about whatever was going on in my life. I had barriers set up. Nobody was getting in, and you weren't going to know who I was, because if you did, you weren't going to like me. I was bewildered about this whole thing, because now I'm feeling worse. I was supposed to be feeling better, and I'm seeing all these other things going on in my life that I don't like about me, and they're showing up now. Bigotry, and I was belligerent. I was bitter. I was blaming. I was trying to bluff you, telling you I was better off than I was. And it's another thing I always say, it's never as good as I tell you it is. It's never as mad I make you believe. There's a place in the middle there that's called balance that I have a lot of problem with. I was beaten. I was bragging. I was full of control still. I was coveting. I was contemptuous. I was cheap. I was cold. I was criticizing. I was full of conflict. I was delusionary. I was overdramatical. And every time I called the ex-wife, she wouldn't let me talk to the kid. I would get into an argument with somebody in the halfway house and try and get into a fight to get thrown out so I can go get drunk. You know about you guys, that's how my mind worked. I was destructive. I was full of deficiencies, many of them. I was desperate. I was still deluded. I was defiant, and I didn't want to surrender. I didn't want to listen to what needed to do in order to change these behaviors. I was still going to do it my way. I exaggerated. I evaded. I had the envy and the egotism and the excesses and the excuses and the frustration and the financial insecurity, and my feelings were all over the place. Anybody sound familiar with any of these feelings? I was full of fear. I knew I was a failure. I was never going to be nothing. I was a worthless piece of garbage, and I'd never be more than that. That's how I walked in here, and that's how I felt. And then they told me feelings weren't facts and thoughts weren't acts. I hated that. I griped. I gambled. I was full of grandeur and greedy, and I had guilt. I was gluttonous. I had grandiosity, hate. I was hopeless. I was humiliated. I had a lot of hurt pride. I was hiding in the rooms of AA. I like to tell that one. One of the things I did when I first got here, it was 6 meetings a day at the place I went to. And I went to all 6 because that way I didn't have to go look for a job. No sloth in that. That way, and they thought I was doing so good because I was going to meetings, you know. I was hiding. I was too afraid to be out in the real world because I couldn't face who I was inside. This is the first chance I'm getting to look at me. And I'm not looking at me through my eyes. I'm looking at me through the eyes of everything I wrote down and how somebody else interpreted it with me. So I'm not doing this alone, not even this. I was immoral. I had insecurity. I had inferiority. I was isolating. Isolation is my favorite. I can sit in this room with all of you guys here right in the front and not pay any attention and shut this whole room out. I can still do that to this day. And that is a dangerous place for me to be. I have to be a part of, because once I become a part from, I become a drunk again. So when I start isolating in a full room of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm heading for big, big trouble. So I have to open up and tell you what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling. And I was told real early on the best way to deal with this, if I think it and feel it, if I don't bring it out in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's going to take me back out there. And I didn't want to go back to the cardboard box. So I told the truth, the best of my ability. That was in a process in itself. Lack of confidence, the loneliness, the justification, the lustfulness. I wanted somebody to fix me. Fix me, I'm here. I told this story yesterday. I was brand new in recovery. I went to get my license removed from New York to Florida, and what ended up happening was there was a warrant or a situation going on from the state of New York, and they yanked my license. So the first thing I had was a bicycle, which was stolen from my halfway house. And I had one of these go-boards. I'm 44 years old, and I'm driving on a go-board. And this girl walks in the room, and the first thought is, boy, I'd love to pick her up. And then somebody says, yeah, you look real good with her in the back of a scooter. The audacity of where my head goes, the walk perception. And I'm not one of those lucky ones that got that back. My first 3 years, I drove a skateboard with a motor on it. And then I got a 49cc Yamaha, and I did that till I was 6 years sober. And then I got caught driving in another part of town in Cooper City, and the laws changed, and they made me go to court. And I went into court, and the judge says, no ticket, you need to go to the motor vehicles. I went to motor vehicles. I went. There was no record of anything wrong. I got my license, and I've been driving ever since. Talk about driving being a privilege. It's the privilege. But there was a defect of character. I did not want to go because I knew there were, I did a lot of bad stuff before I got here. So, and then I felt the oppression, the panic, and the power driving, and the prestige, and the pride, and the flaws that were all over me, and the reluctance, and revenge, and the millions and millions of resentments. The rebellion, and the superiority, and sloth, and the list went on and on and on, the suffering and the secrets and the shortcuts, the stubbornness, that's my favorite one still, self-delusion, the tormenting. I was tormented inside, and I didn't know how to get rid of that. One of the biggest defects I had was I could not look me in the mirror for the first 6 months of my recovery. I used to have posties up there to say, I'm okay, it's all right to look in the mirror. I couldn't look in the mirror. When I came in here, I looked down and out, and I learned to look in and up. That was a real hard journey for me. The hardest journey I had was getting it from my head to my heart. I didn't believe I was worthy of recovery. But I wasn't drinking. I was miserable in recovery. And I still felt that I was unmanageable. I was unhappy. I was definitely unprincipled. I was victimized. Now, I'm going to tell this to anybody that sits in this room. If you play the victim, you won't recover. Victims do not recover. You got to let go of that role. I don't know how to tell you to get low, go that role. The only way I know how to tell somebody to do that is get honest. Get honest with another human being. Because if you play a victim, the poor me's come back. And then there's the old saying, poor me, poor me, pour me another drink. And you go get loaded. So I could not be a victim anymore. I had to own up to what I said. I always tell the story when I call my ex-wife and I go to my sponsor to tell them the problem of the day. I had a problem every day. And we'd sit and solve it. And then one day I tell him the problem of the day, and he says to me, what's your problem going to be tomorrow? And I started to tell him. I was already in tomorrow. I didn't even finish today. And he said to me after that, he says, I call him, and you know, it was a holiday or my kid's birthday, and I call and say, I called the house, and she won't let me talk to the kids. And I'm mad, and I'm angry, and he'd say, and what did you do to deserve to talk to those kids? Well, there we are. Look at your behavior before you got there. You think she should trust you? Absolutely not. So when you learn to actuate a better thinking, maybe with God's grace, she'll come back into your life and let you talk to those kids. That's a story for another step. So I was looking for the validation. I told a story last week of going to my mother's house and looking through the pill bottles and the thing and calling my sponsor up and saying, I want, you know, look how good I did. And he said, what you were looking for was a pat on the back for the behavior you should have been doing without the pat on the back. And that's the things I needed to hear because I didn't believe I was listening to them. I was still worried. I was still had a lot of wrong things. I was still willful. I was still worried. And I was very warped in all my perceptions. You know, when I came in, my sponsor would tell me on certain holidays, when are you going to stop calling 1-800-PAIN, which was my ex-wife. I call on every birthday and every holiday and say, let me talk to the kids, and she made me jump through hoops, and every time I was supposed to talk to my children, it never happened. And he suggested I get a rock. I got my baby here. I got that rock, and he told me to pick it up, and this is part of Drop the Rock, and it was just an assignment given to me. And I took this rock, and he told me to put it in my pocket and walk around with it until I was ready to let go of doing things my way and followed suggestions. And I kept on holding on to that rock, and I wouldn't let go. And I kept holding on to the rock, and every week he'd say, you ready to let go yet? And one day I said yes, and he said, I want you to wash it and put it on up on a shelf. Well, I still have that rock. That rock has been with me since 1994. And I have not taken it down for a very long time. I brought it out tonight because I have a little bag of rocks in here for different little things of character defects that I wasn't willing to let go. And every time that I think I have a better idea, I grab a new rock and I put it in my pocket and talk to my sponsor until I'm ready to let it go. Just one of the little tricks. I needed tricks. And I love tricks. And I love the tricks with my sponsees. So I had this list of stuff that I saw wrong. And now I really feel worse than I did when I started. And I say to my sponsor, what do I do from here? Where do I go from here? How do I get out of this? He says, well, first thing I'm going to tell you is the positive to all this is prayer and God's grace. And he told me that my inappropriate behavior was going to always be inappropriate. I didn't understand that for a very long time. We made this list, and he suggested that I go and I get a piece of paper, and on one side, all these negative things that I had, was write them in red. And then on the other side, of course, I had to do things nice, I had to type them, is to put them in black. And once I did that, he said, then suggested I go out and buy poker chips, the same ones we use here on a regular basis, and to paste on each side, each one, throw them in a bag, and every day shake up the bag and pull out one and work on that asset. Today, I have a full set of chips. I don't do them as much, but I still go to them every time I see it. And I realized in my real early recovery that it was very interesting because whenever I was upset or angry, I would put my hand in the bag and up would come anger, up day after day until it went away. Or up would come grandiosity, or up would come fear, or up would come lust. Whatever was going on in my life, the right chip just happened to come up that day. And that was really tough for me because I didn't realize I was actually acting my way into better thinking because I had that chip and throughout the day I would look at it and I'd have a positive attribute. Now, my sponsor liked six-step things. I lived in a halfway house. Across the street was a 7-Eleven and he made me go to the corner and cross the street. I wasn't allowed to cross in the middle of the block. I wasn't allowed to walk on the grass. All my friends got a great assignment. It was drive the speed limit. And I went to him and I said, can I drive the speed limit? He said, sure, when you get a license. I was 6 months sober. I didn't have a license for another 5.5 years, but I wanted that assignment because that's the way I think. See, I'm looking for the easier, softer way. And the sixth step, with everything I said, I cannot remove any one of those character defects. I need the grace of God. There is where my relationship with God starts changing. So I'm here in the sixth step. I read the paragraph and the prayer. So I'm all ready to go in 6 and 7. I think I got it licked. Today I know I have a house built between 6 and 7. Because I have a daily reprieve from my alcoholism contingent on my spiritual well-being. I also get a reprieve from my character defects. And sometimes it ain't 24 hours. Somewhere along the day, someone's going to say something to me, and I'm going to come out sideways. I'm going to have a thought about doing an inappropriate behavior because I know it's wrong, and I'm going to want to do it. And that's when I need to go back and recommit that to God. That's where my issue comes in six. How do I give back what's not mine in the first place? See, everything I got is on loan. My children are on loan. My recovery's on loan. Everything I've been given is on loan. And I really believe that today. So there's a part in our in the 12 and 12 which says, and it says it that God will not render us white as snow without our cooperation. My sponsor when I got here said, George, if it's not true, don't say it. If it's not yours, don't take it. Is that too tough? Yeah. Honesty is a process. Didn't get honest because I did the first step. I got honest because I stopped lying. I got honest because I told you the truth. I just stopped minimizing and holding back. So those are the ways I work towards honesty. I work towards honesty. I didn't get honest because I got in here and stopped drinking. I was still a liar, cheat, and a thief. I was just sober with it. So those things were a practice. And the sixth step was about me practicing a better way of thinking. I couldn't think my way out of this anymore. I had to act my way out of it. So I had to act my way into better thinking. And the sixth step is the exercises I got. Get on the longest line and win Dixie and let everybody go in front of you for a pack of cigarettes in those days I smoked. A pack of cigarettes, everybody went in front of me. I used to annoy the hell out of me to let everybody in front of me. But my sponsor told me to do it. And I didn't want to go back to where I came from. Go around and the halfway house. I always love talking about the halfway house. Go around and pick up all the cigarette butts. The guy gets jammed for not cleaning up the dishes. Wash the dishes. Well, he did it. Why do I got to suffer? He says, keep yourself up. The service work that went into doing the folding of chairs, the mopping of rooms, one of my favorite defects of character was my sponsor said when I first got here, and service work is how I really worked my way through defects of character. When I got here, he used to say, George, I want you, he sat on a table like this, and he would sit at the end, and he'd say, I want you to sit over there and save that seat for me. And I used to get here 10 minutes earlier, and I used to get there and save the seat. And then he says, I want you to stand by that door and welcome everybody. You may be the own example of the big book they'd see. So I would say hello to everybody, and my mouth wasn't the best in those days. And then he said, all right, now that you're saying hello to everybody and you're saving that seat, I want you to make coffee. Now I'm making coffee, saving his seat, saying hello to everybody. And then I would turn around, and I would have a mouth that was not very clean. There was a couple of words that weren't in four letters when I got here. And he said, garbage in, garbage out. You need to clean that up. I said, why? He says, you come in here and you talk about all kinds of crazy stuff. Like I would come in here and say I have a desire not to drink, and then tell everybody about how much I wanted to do a different substance, and out of respect to this room I won't, and of all the toys and how I was going to play with them. And I always, you know, when they say, you know, that's not Alcoholics Anonymous, you need to go somewhere else, I'd say, well, I have a desire not to drink. You know, I beat you up. And there was my defect of character. And like he said to me, you know, you come into this room, you talk about going out and robbing people or doing drugs. And this poor woman just lost a family member, drinking a little bit too much, knows she has a problem, comes in here and needs help. And she hears you and she can't identify. And because of you, she goes out and dies. Your mouth is offensive. You need to change it. Didn't like hearing that. Now, that doesn't mean, or one of the other ones of my defects of character was that somebody would say something and I cut them off before they finished. One of them I still have. Still struggle with that one. And my sponsor used to say, George, sometimes people just need to talk. You need to just listen. Learn to listen, listen to learn. They just may want to get something off. So they're not looking for an answer. You don't have to have all the answers. Tough thing for me. Because I think that somebody's coming to you, they got to have an answer. They got a problem. How am I going to help them? You know? So I stopped cursing. And then the way I learned to stop cursing in the rooms is every time I opened my foul mouth, I had to get up in front of a group and tell them I was wrong. And I was sorry. I don't like doing that. I don't know about you guys. I don't like doing that. So it got real easy for me to stop cursing in the rooms. Another one is my ex-wife, who I never, in the rooms, ever said anything negative about because she was very good to my children. And I believe that to this day. Now, what she said to me behind my back or that I don't know about really doesn't matter. It really doesn't. But I never belittled her in these rooms because I never knew. Because that was just the way I was raised. It had nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. Did I tell my sponsor what I thought? Absolutely. And certain things do not belong in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where sponsorship comes in. And my sponsor was kind enough to point me in directions to show me that my thinking was warped. And an example was when the women came into the rooms and they had children. In my early sobriety, and I shared this story here a couple of weeks ago, my sponsor suggested that I go and babysit because I can always make another meeting. That woman may not. And I did it for a couple of months and I got tired of it. Your son's a good example. I got tired of it. And one day I go to my sponsor and I say, I'm tired of doing this. He said, well, you're doing it for two reasons. I said, two reasons? You tell me that's the only meeting that woman can go to. I said, what's the second? He says, to practice being the father you never were to your own kids. Those are the kind of 2x4s that hurt. But those are the kind of truths I needed to hear. Because I couldn't see the defect. I don't see me clearly. I never see me clearly. You guys see me better than I'll ever see me. Now, that is my sixth step. It says a bunch of things in the 12 and 12. It says, when a person repeatedly works on step six on all his faults without reservations, he has indeed come a long way spiritually and therefore be entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his Creator. By me doing the work that was laid out in front of me, I was changing. These defects were still there. The 12 and 12 in step 12 talks about we come to a fundamental idea of step six, and in step seven it says God will remove from us our key defects of character, such as the conditions of the day we ask. See, because if I don't ask and I'm not really honest about wanting something to go, God's not going to take it from me. I got to meet God halfway with it. That's just my experience. It says, having been granted a perfect release from alcohol, why shouldn't I be able to achieve the same means, a perfect release from every other difficulty or defect? This is a riddle of our existence, the full answer which may be only in the mind of God. See, I can sit here and tell you what you're doing wrong, or I can see what you're doing wrong, and then go tell you about it. Doesn't mean anything. My opinion really doesn't matter. I was told what I think of you is none of my business, and what I think of me is none of my business. It's God's business. My sponsor will tell me what I need to think about. And I had to learn to not judge other people in these rooms. And trust me, I still judge other people in these rooms. I'm not healthy in a lot of areas. When I see someone hurting somebody, I'm going to judge them. And knowing me, I'm going to open my big mouth. Just hasn't gone away yet. I'm not that healthy. So I got to be real careful, because God is, you know, like my sponsor used to say at the early days, you're helping a lot of people. They used to come to the meeting, and I used to babble about this or run off about that. And I say, and you're helping a lot. Come back tomorrow. You're helping a lot of people. And about a week or two goes by. I said, how am I helping all these people? He says, George, you're teaching these people how not to behave. So my character defects, I believe, to this day, God either removes them because it's time for them to go, or he leaves them there for other people to learn how not to behave. And that goes for all of us. There are two kinds of people you're going to meet in Alcoholics Anonymous. People you want to be like and people you don't. And I find the people I want to be like, and that's who I hang with. The ones I don't, I'll help them, but I won't hang with them. When men and women pour out that much alcohol into them, they destroy their life. They commit a most unnatural act, defying their instinctual drive for self-preservation. They seem to be bent on self-destruction. They work against their own deepest instinct. My deepest instinct when I got here, as I wanted to die. I didn't feel worthy of life. I didn't think there was anything I had to live for. Everything that meant anything was gone in my life. I walked in here where I was broken, and I didn't think I deserved what I saw other people have. And it used to annoy the hell out of me when other people got things ahead of me. Just those defects of characters come glaring at me. They're still there. They just don't show up the same way anymore. They're a little bit more sneaky with me. It's nowhere evident, at least in our life, that our Creator expects to fully eliminate all our instinctual drives. Boy, did that take me off the hook. So far as we know, there's nowhere on record that God has completely removed from any human being all his natural drives. Since most of us are born with an abundance of natural desires, it isn't strange that we often let them far exceed their intended purpose when they drive us blindly. See, I want what I want, and I want it now. When I was out there, what was mine was mine, what yours was going to be mine. It drove me. That's how I lived my life. I went to get whatever I could to get whatever I needed to get me where I wanted to go. We willfully abandon, they supply us with more satisfactions or pleasures than are possibly due us. That is the point in which we depart from the degree of perfection that is God wishes for us on earth. There's so much I can say about God's will versus my will in this step. I have to take a lot of action to meet God. Sometimes I act my way into better thinking. Sometimes because of my fears, I don't act as well as I should have, or I don't reach out in the right directions, or I hold back because you might not like me. I still have the same frailties, and I like to call them human frailties, that I did the day I got here. The only difference is I'm not afraid to face them. And when I'm not sure, I share them with someone else. And that's usually my sponsor. My sponsor will put me on a journey so I can look at them and not that let them be the boogeyman that's going to drive me back to a bottle. Because that's what this is all about. How do I not drink? Will I become a better person by not doing certain things? Yes, maybe. I don't know. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Overall, yes. Compared to where I came in here, I'm a much different person. We ask God to forgive our derelictions, but in no case does he render us white as snow without our cooperation. It's in our sixth step. I have to cooperate. We say in AA that faith without works is dead. Same thing. I have to do certain work in order for God to come in to expel the obsession and drink. I have to place myself in a position for that. I have to do the same thing with my character defects. If I'm lying, cheating, and stealing, and I come in here, and I'm here 5 years, and I'm still lying, cheating, and stealing, I have untreated alcoholism in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is devastating. That is death. And that is not a price I want to pay. I've seen people come in here and then go out and never smile again. I'm not willing to pay that price. There's a price to be paid for my dereliction of not doing the work that was laid out in front of me. And the price is spiritual death. So step six, we're entitled to have God remove these defects of character, is AA's way of stating the best possible attitude one can take in order to make a beginning of a lifetime job. It ain't going to go away because I did my sixth step. It ain't going to go away because I'm here for 18 plus years. It ain't going to go away in 6 months, and some of it may not go away till the day I die. But what I do is I have an opportunity to grow towards being a better person. The best George I know how to be today is the prayer that I like to use. This does not mean we expect our character defects to be lifted as the way the drive to drink was. A few of them may be, but what most of them are should be contented with patient improvement. And the key words in this is entirely ready. Again, I can be willing and ready, but if I don't take the action, nothing's going to change. Nothing changes if nothing changes. Underline the fact that we want to aim for the best we can be or learn. If we regain a real advantage in the use of this step on problems other than alcohol, I don't go out and cheat on whoever I'm with anymore. Not that I did it when I was married. I didn't, because I was very loyal. But when I knew the relationship was going, I was lining up my next Mrs. Susie B. Or I was going to put one aside and have two on the shelf, you know, just so I wasn't alone. Or my codependency issues would come up. All those things that I did because I was trying to fill the inside with material stuff. I was trying to fill a hole and not be okay in my own skin, because I wasn't okay in my own skin. So it says, if we're to gain any real advantage in the use in this step other problems than alcohol, we need to take a brand new venture into open-mindedness. Now, how do I get to that place where my mind is willing to try something different? In the back of the big book, in the spiritual experience, it says that there are three essentials to recovery: honesty, open-minded, and willingness. They're indispensable to our recovery. And there's another one that says right after that that there's a principle that keeps us in everlasting ignorance, and that principle is contempt prior to investigation. I was willing to try all these things that they put in front of me to prove to you it didn't work. Well, guess what? In spite of me, I'm still here. It does work. It works because I worked it. And I worked what was laid out in front of me in spite of the fact of how I felt, what I wanted, or what I believed I deserved. So this thing will continue to work as long as I do the action. So that was my new adventure in open-mindedness. I was willing to do what they laid out in front of me. We shall need to raise our eyes towards perfection, be ready to walk in that direction. It doesn't matter how slowly we walk, haltingly we walk. The question is, are we ready? See, I wasn't ready to let go of my children at the beginning when I was served with papers for a year. I had a fight with myself for that year. But when I made a decision what was based on what was best for my children, all those deep character defects and all that anger and all that resentment and all that shit, it's the only way I know to say it, that I was carrying, I was able to let go of. Because God's grace came into me and gave me the strength and courage to meet the conditions as they were. And it took a lot of years before that got rectified. And part of it's still not. It took 14 years for my daughter to speak to me. And my son, because of my behaviors, still doesn't speak to me. And that is a direct result of the way I behaved prior to getting here. So it says, at the very least, we shall have to come to grips with some of the worst character defects and take action toward their removal. My worst character defect in most of the time is that I knew about rage. I didn't know anger was a good place to get to, because I would have rage. And my sponsor let me know that anger was okay. It's what I did with that anger, how to use it, how to do it without hurting somebody else or myself. So those were things that were given to me by somebody giving me some directions. some of the things that my sponsor used to do, and I used to think he was amazing. He wrote my name on the bottom of a chair because I used to come in late, sit in the back, and sneak out early. And one of the defects of character I had is I would smoke. And here's how I got to see a character defect of mine. I would go in the room and puke about what was my problem of the day and make it into a question because that's how I was taught to do it. And then I go outside for a cigarette in a smoking room, if you can understand that. And then when I come back, the meeting would be going on. And my sponsor says, I want you to watch something now, George. I want you to watch the next guy that brings up a subject, pukes all over this room and walks out, and you tell me what you notice. So I hear some guy complaining about whatever it was of the day. He walks out, and the whole room is full of solution. Guy is hearing everything he needs to hear, but he's not in the room to hear it. As soon as he comes back in the room, the whole meeting changes. That is the second tradition working. So I learned that no matter what I was doing, and my sponsor said to me, you sit in this room, I don't care if you bounce from wall to wall, when that meeting starts, you stay till the end. That was real important to me. That was a defect of character. I used to bounce. I was so good when I got here. I could clear a table, we used to joke about. I was so hyper. I used to have to wrap my legs around the bottom of the chair. Barry's laughing, she remembers. I wrap my legs around the bottom of the chair and then sit on my hands for a whole hour, because I was knocking coffee up, and I still talk that way, but and that's the way I was. That didn't go away because I stopped drinking. That went away when more and through prayer and meditation. But I wasn't there. So these were actual exercises, physical exercises, because it's physical, mental, and spiritual. And my defects can affect me in any one of those areas. So here again, these were all exercises that a good sponsor gave me. And it says, the moment we say no, never. When I used to complain that this was never going to work for me, my sponsor said, you're closing your mind against the grace of God. And that's what the sixth step says. The moment we say no, never, our minds close against the grace of God. Delay is dangerous, rebellion is fatal. On the beginning of my sixth step, my 12 and 12, is what it says is, stop doing what's wrong. What does that mean? Stop doing what's wrong. Stop doing what's wrong for George. See, my morality can get you drunk. If I live by your rules, you can get me drunk. I have to find that place to be comfortable in my own skin. The sixth step for me was about obedience and discipline. That's hard stuff if you're like me. And what the sixth step started to tell me as I sat here for a while is what we are. When we walk in here, is God's gift to us. What we are when we walk in here is what we become when we get to that seventh step. And through the work is our gift back to God. And we'll talk about that next week. Thanks for letting me share.